Real College Podcast is presented by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and is a production of Radio K.
Folks, this is it. We are in the heart of summer, and I hope you're enjoying the 90-degree days and the jam-packed beaches, because I hate to tell you, this isn't going to happen all year long. Remember, these are the days that we dream of as we scrape ice from our windshields during the brutal winter months. And I love summer because everyday activities move outside just because they can. Cooking becomes grilling. I brought my computer outside to surf the internet because I wanted to say, yeah, I enjoyed that beautiful day. And on today's show, Jackie Renzetti looks into a unique community project that combines two summer pastimes, lakes and all the fun they have to offer, and books and all the knowledge that they help spread. And then later, Max Fuller interviews a comedian slash puppeteer slash Renaissance man. Emily Allen tells us about local slam poets, while Emily Clark brings us this week's Question of the Week. I'm Patrick Sharkey. This is Real College Podcast. Let's do it.
Hi, guys.
That was really sweet.
Here, I can pull you in. So, hi, can't believe you made it out here. That's amazing.
I'm not sure what's more unusual here, that complete strangers are hanging out in kayaks and canoes in the middle of Lake Phalen, or that they're reading art books checked out from a nearby floating library.
I mean, there's just many, many moments of people riding up and being like, you're a what? And you're explaining your library. And then after they're like, okay, I get that. I know what a library is. And then you explain that everything here is made by artists and they're uncommon books. And there's this sort of dual level of surprise that's really fun.
That was Sarah Peters. She created and launched the Floating Library Project in 2013. And since then, she's continued each summer with funding from different grants.
Hi, guys. Hey, you two.
On an 8x8-foot raft built by Sarah and her friends, volunteer librarians hand out colorful art books and zines. This year's collection contains
really
over 70 books submitted by artists from across the country, with some even from across the globe. The artist books all play with the form of what a book can be. So some might be mostly drawings or pictures, while others might have poetry or short stories.
Right now I'm perusing a book called Spontaneous Cases, which is by Susie Balek and Fred Schmaltz, and it's amazing. It's like, so far seems to be, it's like a little envelope that contains a series of stapled together cue cards on which they've written a series of what seem to be fictional dreams and are just gorgeous. Yeah, so I've really been taken by those.
Running a library in the middle of a lake takes some strategy. Books are kept safe in plastic tubs or sleeves. There's even a checkout system, which Sarah developed with some trial and error.
One of the big learnings the very first year was that I let people check things out. And even like anything, it was very idealistic. And many beautiful and beloved one copy only books did not come back. And so what we landed on last year, which is the same method this year, is that we have a reference collection, which people can read while they're docked at the raft, or a circulating collection. And those are books that we have multiple copies of, mostly, so that if something does find its way into a loving home or the water, that we can still have another copy of it for display. And people can read while they're here at the lake and return their books to the raft or to the book return box that's at the boat rental place on the beach.
But even when books do fall into the water, not all is lost.
Last year, we had a tragedy aboard the canoe where all of the books that were being canoed back to shore at the end of the first weekend of the run tipped over and capsized. But luckily, the lake at that point was not very deep. And so all the humans were fine and all the books were rescued. And we set up a triage center at Silverwood Park and brought out all the towels from the janitorial closet and spent this long night like drying them all off and then tending them over the course of the next week to dry them. And I got a little glimpse at what it must be like to be a book conservator, or also in a heavier way, but sort of meaningful way, what it must be like to lose culture to things like war, you know, museums that are being rampaged in places where war is happening, often involving the United States, where we probably shouldn't be. And that it's an intimate thing to save a drowned book It's a careful process of turning each page and inserting blotter paper so that it dries flat and properly. And it gave me kind of an insight to how important books are, even when they're zines photocopied at Kinko's. And that that for people around the world that are fighting to save their culture, it just gave me a different kind of insight into what that might be like.
The importance of keeping the books dry isn't lost on the visitors either.
Well, I was checking out a box full of books, and the box itself is in a plastic container, but none of the books are. And so when I was taking out the books, it wasn't like they were covered in a plastic sheet, which means I was hyper aware of the wind and the water surrounding me as I was handling the books. And I was also aware of like splashes that were occurring and if they would damage the books.
Aside from helping readers connect with books in a different way, the risk factor helps people connect with each other. Patrons carefully reach outside their boats and slowly hand off plastic tubs or books to other readers. And unlike in real libraries, people laugh and discuss some of their favorite pieces.
Like, it's very evident that there's a kind of community here, which is really nice. So often, like, reading a book is an incredibly isolating experience. And, you know, you're, like, communicating with images and dead authors, maybe. But it's rare that you're surrounded by a bunch of other people who are also reading books alone together.
The Floating Library opened July 16th and will be back on Lake Phelan for one last weekend on August 6th and 7th from 1 to 7 p.m. For Real College Podcast, I'm Jackie Renzetti.
David Lieberhart is a black jack of all trades. He is an actor, musician, comedian, puppeteer, and avid alien supporter, all wrapped up in one. He began to be noticed for all his talents on Adult Swim's Tim and Eric Show, an insane yet intelligent comedy show with a touch of old school variety and that new school off-kilter humor. David is no newbie on the scene, though, as he's been working the Hollywood scene for years, rooming with Robin Williams and even appearing as an extra in several Richard Pryor movies, as well as having his own public access television show for 20 years in Hollywood. I got a chance to talk with David over the phone about how he was inspired to be so many things, his encounters with extraterrestrials, and a lot more.
How did you first get involved with puppeteering? Because I know that you do puppets and stuff.
Well, Jim Henson was my Sunday school teacher in the Christian Science Church when I went to the family reunions in Washington, D.C., and he took me to a taping called Sam and Friends, a black and white puppet show that he did that was locally in Washington, D.C., and he would teach us the Ten Commandments and the Bible stories with puppets, with Kermit the Frog and his rock head looking puppets.
You seem to be passionate about so many different things. What made you want to get involved in comedy?
I started doing stand-up comedy, and I took stand-up comedy. You know, used to give acting comedy classes was Jonathan Winters. He's a super talented comedian. I met him in person. He was on the last season of Morgan Mindy. He also had his own show in the 50s and 60s called The Jonathan Winters Show. And he was an outstanding comedian. And being Robin Williams took a lot of that stand-up comedy with him. And I also was inspired by Richard Pryor. I did a lot of his movies in the early 80s and 90s. I was inspired by Eddie Murphy that you don't hear from now. Everybody's using this guy, Kevin Hart. Okay, Kevin Hart is like the new Eddie Murphy of the 80s. He's probably doing a movie every month. He's a super talented guy, and I like him, but I wish they would not just give one actor all the work of all the movies, would give other new talent a chance. I love Kevin Hart. He's a super talented guy. Sometimes Screen Actors Guild, because we both have a similar last name, mail me his royalty checks, and I have to mail him back to Screen Actors Guild. I said, I'm not Kevin Hart, I'm David Lieberhart. And you mail the check to the wrong place. And I have to turn around and put it back in the mail.
Since you have, like, all these outlets to express yourself, what is the, like, creative process like for you when you're coming up with music or when you're coming up with comedy?
Well, I write about ex-girlfriends. I write about things I've been through, things I've experienced, the UFO phenomenon. I write some religious songs. And I write mostly about experience. I'm like Jim Croce. Jim Croce's originally from Pennsylvania, like my dad's side of the family. And I write about things that I've been through and things that I've experienced.
Aside from religious music, I've listened to some other of your songs that dealt with, like, extraterrestrials.
Yeah, I've written songs about extraterrestrials. I did experience seeing extraterrestrials. I did experience seeing UFOs, flying saucers, just the unusual phenomenon. I got people that were high up in Christian Science, that were high up in the military, and I stayed with my cousin Phyllis McKinnon that used to work at Wright-Patterson's Air Force Base. She shared with me the 15 years I lived with her that she saw a lot of classified and declassified things. She said all that she told me before she died on her deathbed. She died in 92 of Hopkins disease, but before she died, she told me the computers and cell phones and GPS would be in every home and business by year 2000, and she predicted it and it was true and it came true. And she says the military was testing computers and cell phones and anti-gravity and the compulsion system way back in the military when she worked at Wright-Patterson's Air Force Base in the 50s and the 40s.
Dang, way back then they were testing that kind of stuff?
Way back then, and they got it from President Eisenhower, cut a deal with the extraterrestrials when that spaceship crashed in Roswell, that they could do all the cattle mutilations, all the abductions in exchange for their back engineering technology.
If you want to learn more about David Liebehart, you can find him at artbyliebehart.com or catch him on reruns of The Tim and Eric Show on Cartoon Network's Adult Swim. From the Real College Podcast, this is Max Fuller.
In an interview with the Washington Post, Hamilton star Daveed Diggs talked about his beginnings with Youth Speaks, a nonprofit arts organization founded in 1996, Berkeley, California. This is where Diggs learned about different forms of spoken word, like slam poetry, a competitive form of reciting poetry where performers are restricted to 3 minutes a poem, and they perform for a set of judges as well as, of course, an audience. Even though Diggs and Youth Speaks are both from Berkeley, California, after reading this interview with the Washington Post, I wondered if there were any similar spoken word organizations here, in the Twin Cities.
Everyone, like, Button Poetry started here, like, all the distributors for spoken word, like, on a large scale is centered in Minnesota, and that's, like, amazing opportunity for everyone, I think.
That was Duncan Slagle, one of the youth poets I met at a slam hosted by WordSprout on Tuesday. Organizations like WordSprout, True Art Speaks, and Button Poetry have all contributed to a community where youth poets like Duncan and Amir Kadar, who you'll hear from next, can express themselves through spoken word.
I got started by, like, listening to Button Poetry. I spent a lot of time on the internet, and I was also in speech, like, I think it's called the NFL, National Forensics League, where, like, we would repeat other people's, like, words, and a lot of people would do poetry that I saw in Button Poetry.
I also got to talk with WordSprout's founder, Allison, who has given a lot to the spoken word community here in the Twin Cities. Here's what she had to say about how she got started with the spoken word community here.
I got started in Poetry Slam after college because I still wanted to keep competing and stuff. I was on the competitive speech team all the way through college, and I found out about Poetry Slam then. So when I moved to the Twin Cities, I started competing. And about a year later, they were looking for somebody to take over the slam, so I volunteered to do that, and that was about 10 years ago.
We also talked about how strong Allison would say the community is here in the Twin Cities.
In Poetry Slam, we are one of the most competitive scenes in the country. We've won nationals 2 years. We've been to semifinals a number of years in the last 6 or 7 years. And I would say overall, we have a really neat scene growing because our youth team is just spectacular. And the last 2 years, they've been invited to put people up on final stage and have made semifinals. And our college teams have been in semifinals and finals at nationals. So I think we really have a system that's starting really young, all the way through adult.
After my interview with Allison, I gathered that the community here in the Twin Cities is a successful one. But it's also a welcoming one. And this is something that the audience plays a huge role in.
My perfect audience is someone who's really excited to be here, somebody that will be encouraging to the performers, like snapping, cheering for them, somebody who's like kind of in on the game of booing for the judges, cheering for the scores, and is participatory, which in Minnesota doesn't always happen really naturally. You know, somebody who's really engaged with the performers, and also is not like drinking too much and interruptive towards them or anything like that. But like, you know, somebody who's just like really into what's happening and you really connecting with all the stuff that's happening on stage.
Do you guys usually get that sort of lively, appropriate crowd?
Yeah, I mean, some nights vary, but I think definitely at our bigger shows, they kind of rally together for a good time.
Allison wasn't kidding. As I sat in the audience at the Slam on Tuesday night, the crowd was very engaged. The audience snapped their fingers often to express approval. Every poet received a rowdy span of applause upon finishing, and teams cheered each other on. The enthusiasm was impressive, and so were the poets. I later asked if stage fright was a thing that any of the youth poets worried about, or anything that comes with writing and performing for that matter, like writer's block or nervousness.
All of the above, yeah. I mean, that it's always hard to share work that you care about, so that's a huge... I think people lump, like, nervousness and stage fright together, or, like, the fact that I care a lot about my work is going to make me nervous to perform it for people. But yeah, that's all real.
Writer's block has always been really real. Like, it's just hard sometimes to get up and start writing. And even if like some kind of emotional event arises, it's still hard for me because I got to think of the words to use. Because it's like a lot of intellect mixed in with creativity, and sometimes it just, you can't balance it out correctly.
And finally, I wondered if Duncan and Amir might continue with spoken word beyond the youth level, or if they can ever see themselves inspiring other youth poets.
Yeah, I think poetry offers like an opportunity to speak to very personal like narratives that we all may have. And I've had people come up to me after slams and be like, I can relate to what your poem was talking about. And like, that's always amazing. So yeah, I hope to be that for someone someday.
I'd love to be the person that people look up to. I don't know if I'm there yet, but maybe one day.
For Yale College Podcast, I'm Emily Allen. Our hearts are free,
so tell me what's wrong with feeling. Hi, I'm Monica, bringing you Word on the Street. Starting the week off, on Monday, Esme Patterson takes to 7th Street Entry, following the release of her new album, We Were Wild, which features a new and folksy sound. Listen for yourself in this track, No River. Friday, relive childhood memories at the Orpheum Theater with the production of The Lion King. As the work week winds down, sit back and watch these amazing actors perform in the spirit of Hakuna Matata. This clip comes from the Disney film.
Woo! Hakuna Matata. Hakuna Matata. Hakuna Matata. Matata.
On Saturday, continue on living your 90s kid nostalgia with Flip Phone, XXL shorts featuring the best of the Flip Phone era, 1996 to 2006. Get your freak on to some Missy Elliott, NSYNC, or Beyoncé, Destiny's Child edition. Like from this track, Say My Name by Destiny's Child.
Say my name, say my name. No one is around you. Say, baby, I love you. If you ain't running games. Say my name, say my name. You acting kinda shady. Ain't calling me baby. Why the sudden change? Say my name, say my name. If no one is around you. Say, baby, I love you. If you ain't running games. Say my name, say my name. You acting kinda shady. Ain't calling me baby. Better say my name.
Another day, I will call. You would say, baby, how's your day? But today, it ain't the same. Every other word is a huh, yeah, okay. Could it be that you are at the crib with another lady? If you took it there, first of all, let me say, I am not the one to sit around and be played. So prove yourself to me. I'm the girl that you claim. Why don't you say the things that you said to me?
Also on Saturday, Grays opens for White Lung at the Triple Rock Social Club. Edgy Canadian punk rockers White Lung revel in the release of their fourth album titled Paradise, which feature piercing vocals and jagged guitar playing, exemplified in the track Hungry. And that's it this week for Word on the Street. Now back to more Real College Podcast.
This is Emily Clark with the question of the week, and this week we headed to the Washington Avenue Bridge to ask people what their weirdest pet peeves are. And here are their answers.
Something weird that I really don't like. I don't like it when I sleep and people make noise. I really hate it. Yeah, that's it.
My weirdest pet peeve is when people sign off on the phone and say, bye. For some reason, it's not goodbye, it's bye. It drives me crazy.
People who don't speak. I'm originally from north of Virginia, so when I'm out on the sidewalk or whatnot, you know, walk by somebody, I speak. I don't find that too much here in Minneapolis, especially the downtown area. If I go into the residence where the houses are, you know, the people are more inclined to speak. But most part, people don't even look at you; they head straight forward. You know, and that is something I'm not used to.
My weirdest pet peeve, I guess, would be toes, like feet. Cause I wouldn't want it to be in my face or anything like that, or somebody touching them, let me know. No.
One of my weirdest pet peeves would have to be listening to someone chew. Like, I don't like the sound of people chewing. Like, it just sounds weird. Like, even if their mouth is closed, I'm just like, why do I still hear you chewing? Like, it's just...
The ones that go on the tree and they go bzzz.
College professors giving homework on weekends.
I think man buns are just like... The fad should have probably been over a year before it even started. And the only thing worse than just a man bun is a dirty man bun. And that's like 90% of the ones that I see walking around campus, so.
I feel like rompers do not compliment anybody, like, at all. Unless you're, like, already attractive. They're just, they make people look frumpy.
That was your question of the week. And now back to the Real College Podcast.
That'll do it for this week's Real College Podcast. Contributing to today's show was Jackie Renzetti, Monica Hetzler, Max Fuller, Emily Clark, and Emily Allen. And Real College Podcast is edited by me, Patrick Sharkey. We'll end today's show with Radio K's weekly release spotlight, which this week is Japanese Breakfast and their brand new record, Psychopunk. In addition to the record, we are featuring an interview with Japanese Breakfast conducted by none other than Radio K's music director, Luke Michaels. You can find that interview and other fun stuff on our website, radiok.org. And thanks for listening to Radio K's Real College Podcast. We'll see you next week.